We're going to do a review today, and for much of the time, and see if you have questions. So we will have the test this Thursday. So and there is a quiz. I think most of you have already taken it, and I think you can take it three times. Now, since the quiz is still active, so I guess we can't discuss the very specific questions in the quiz, but any related questions, certainly, we can answer. So anything that you saw in the quiz, that we can certainly discuss that. And also, you may have noticed, I have put a list of items on the CS470 web page, which is basically just a list of the things that we have done so far. And let me read this. So these are the things that are included in the test: gates and Boolean algebra, functional blocks, encoders, multiplexers, collators, PLAs and ROMs, two-level logic, sum of product and product of sums form, Carnot maps, PLA minimization. We saw that for, in case of PLA minimization, we want to minimize the number of product terms, whereas in case of Carnot maps, we want to have the fewest product terms and fewest terms within the product terms. We looked at arrays of blocks. For example, you can connect a set of full adders to form a parallel binary adder. We talked about delays, and we talked about why we need the clock, which brings in synchronization. And we looked at flip-flops. We looked at registers, and we saw that registers can load information in parallel, or you can have a shift register in which information is shifted one bit at a time. We talked about memory addressing, and talked about RAM chips. We looked at synchronous sequential circuits, which are examples of finite state machines. And we saw how a finite state machine can be described using a truth table or a state diagram. And we saw how to analyze a finite state machine and how to design a finite state machine. We will see an example today. And so you should be able to analyze finite state machines. You should be able to design finite state machines. There are a couple of questions in the quiz, which are basically part of analysis and part of design. And you should be able to say what will happen if I give you a finite state machine, perhaps described by a state diagram, then you should be able to say that if we start in a certain state, and if I apply a certain sequence of inputs, how it will go through successive states and what outputs you would observe. Use of the logic simulator, LogiSim. So you have all used that. RISC and CISC processors coming to the instruction set architecture. We talked about instruction processing. That instruction needs to be fetched, decoded, executed, and so on. We talked about instruction formats and instruction fields. So you should know what different fields in the instructions are. So bring this card, the green card. Everyone has this card? But it should be coming in your book. It should be in your book. So yeah, this is from the book. So everyone has this? You don't have this?
No, I have, but I have a question.
Okay.
Does the shift instruction include
Which one?
Shift
instruction. Let's see, was that one of the instructions we saw last time? We didn't talk too much about the shift instruction. Let's see, what did we say about the shift instruction? Now that is one of the computational instructions.
We talked about the difference between logical shifts and arithmetic shifts.
Yeah, we were talking about the difference between logical and arithmetic shifts. Are there any questions about the shift instruction, logical and arithmetic shifts?
But we didn't have example.
The shift instruction. Yeah, let's look at an example of the shift instruction. Yes. So, now we look at that. Yeah, that's a good suggestion. So let's look at an example of how the shift instruction works. So we will look at that. Now we have not seen branch instructions, so we will exclude branch instructions. So anything that we did not see until the end of last lecture, we were going to not include that. Something like this, shift right logical, and let's put a destination that this true may be T2, and let's take a source register T1, and let us use a number, and let's say 2. Shift right circle. Now we know that this is a destination. This is source. And this is the number of bits by which the shift will take place. Number of bits per shift. So everything shifts by that number. And let's pick an example. Let's say we have T1. And let's put something in there, some 16 bit. 2 bits to, did we say left? Shift. Oh, I'm sorry, this is right. Shift right, and of course that is logical. So everything is going to shift 2 bits to this side. And let's say we have 10 10 11. Let me make sure I can squeeze in 32 bits in there. 11 10 00 00 11 11 0 0 0 0. How many do we have so far? 1 1 1 1 0 0 0 0 0 0 0. Okay. So I hope I have 32 bits here. 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8. Okay. So this is how it was in T1, and as a result of the shift, Now everything shifts to the right by 2 bits, right? Okay, so everything shifts 2 bits to the right. And notice, we said this is a logical shift. And what does it say about the incoming bits?
Zeros.
They should be zeros, right? For logical shift. So this one, two, three, four, this one shifts here. So 1, 0. Incoming bits are 0, 0, and everything else is shifted. So then we have 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0. I should have a count of how many bits I have written. Okay, I have to double check to make sure I haven't made a mistake. Everything, is everything shifted by 2 bits? So this one is here, this one is here. Okay, questions on this? So basically everything is shifted here by 2 bits.
If it was a instead of an L arithmetic, where would the sign bit end up?
Okay, so your question is shift right
a.
Arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, let's assume it's the same instruction. Okay, I guess I'm not going to write the whole thing, but let me just write 8 bits here. Now, we said that this would shift by 2 bits, so we have 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, like this. So question is, what comes here, right? And it's an arithmetic shift. That means if this is assigned a number, you want to keep the same sign. So they would be filled with 1, 1. So basically, the sign bit is, this is a sign bit, and it is also replicated here. So that is an arithmetic shift. And basically, the idea is that shifting anything to right amounts to dividing it by 2, either exactly or approximately, right? And if it's a negative number, you want the result to be approximately half, or exactly half, if it is divisible by 2.
So no matter how many times you shift it, you're going to fill up with whatever the first bit is.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah, I think that was a good question.
This microcontroller, like if I want to look up the documentation or something, it's the MIPS 2000.
And the processor that we are looking at?
Yeah.
Well, we are just calling it MIPS. Now MIPS of course has several variations.
Yeah.
And what we are looking at is a subset of the MIPS instructions. So, the instructions that we are looking at, it should be implemented in all the MIPS because it's a very small subset. So it should be applicable to any MIPS process, any version of MIPS.
Do
shift, if this were a left shift, where would the first two bits go?
Okay, if this was a, question is, if this was a left shift, what would happen to, what happens to the most significant bits? If it is if something is shifted to the left, here is something, and let's say everything is shifted, so maybe it is shifted by a few bits this way, shifted to the left, so this bit is coming from here. Question is, what happens to these bits? Is that the question? Yeah, so what happens to these bits? That they are gone. So they are basically gone.
So no overflow?
No, there wouldn't be any overflow. If it is a, for example, if it, let us say if this is a signed number and you are doing a, and if you are shifting it this way, and your result, depending on the space, your answer may or may not be correct. So it would, so you have to keep track of whether or not you have something in useful in the most significant bit. So typically, in this case, you would do it when there is no useful information here.
Would an arithmetic shift to the left bring it around? Bring the most significant bit around?
Would it bring it around for you to the other end? No. It will. Now, shift right arithmetic is this, and shift left arithmetic, if you have shift left arithmetic, which is same as shift shift left logical. Basically, you know that the incoming bits would be zero. So whenever you have an, and you can verify that the answer would be correct, provided you are not losing any information in the shifting process. Now let's start from the beginning in our review. So let's go to digital design, and let us look at synchronous sequential circuit design. And let's assume we want to design a circuit, and let's assume that we want to design an up counter. And by that we mean, here the circuit with input X. When X is 1, it counts up by 1. And when input X is 0, it holds the count. And let's assume that it is a 2-bit counter. So basically, the counter, if you start with 0, it will go to 1, and then 2, and then to 3, and then it will go to 0, and so on. And it will go up as long as input X is 1, otherwise it will hold whatever count you have. So let us design this circuit, and so basically here's how the state diagram will look like. We need 4 states, right? So here are the 4 states. Now notice that this is a 2-bit counter. And it would be convenient to have the output equal to the state. So it would be convenient if we start in state 0, 0, and it counts up, it goes to state 0, 1, and we take the output directly from the state. In other words, no other gates are needed to generate the two outputs. And here, after 0, we have 1, 0, and then 1, 1. And input x, when it is 0, stays here. And when input x is 1, you count up and go to 0, 1. And you stay there. And if input x is 1, you go up. And, oh, I'm sorry. Now, if you have only 2 bits, where should you go next in a counter after 1, 1?
Zero.
You should go to 0, 0, obviously, right? So if x is 1, so this is how the state diagram would look like. Notice that we don't need to specify the output separately, because in this case, output is taken from the state. That keeps our design simpler. So let us design this, and let's first get a truth table. And a state table. And we could have our input x. And let me call these what should I call them?
S1, S0.
Okay, S1, S0, something like this. Yeah, I guess, and that's good. So S0 and S1. Yeah, I guess that this is convenient because we know that this implies this is supposed to be the least significant bit. So that would be convenient for us. So notice that this is the input and this is the present state and the next state. And what about the output? The output we are going to take directly from present state, so that we don't need to have a column for output. We can put maybe a column, which is going to be exactly the same thing. So clearly, we are going to need 2 flip-flops. So we go ahead and put this in. I should make sure that we do have 8 rows there. And what do we want the next state in this case?
0, 0.
Right, because in this case input x is 0, so it holds the count. So as long as x is 0, it holds the count. So here the count is 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Now when x is 1, it goes up by 1. That's why we call it the up counter. So here would be, state is 0, 0. So it should next go to 0, 1, right? And from 0, 1, it should go to 1, 0. From 1, 0, it should go to 1, 1. And from 1, 1, it should go to 0, 0. So here we have the state table. And next thing to do is to come up with a minimized implementation. And now let us assume that this here is implemented . This is going to be, here we are going to use a flip-flop input D0, here we are going to use a flip-flop input D1. So we can get our Karma maps. And there is no Karma map for the output because output is taken directly from here. And this here is S1, this is S0, and this is X. So we have a 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1. 0, 1, 0 is a 1, and this is the 1. 0, 1, 0, 1 is 1, 1, 1, 0 is 1, and that's a 0. I hope that is correct. And then I have 0, 1, 0, 1. 1, 0, 1, 0. Okay, let's see. Okay, before we go forward, let's double check and make sure that we have done this correctly. D1 is 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0. Okay. Okay, let me see how my I implemented the answer on this here. So let me make sure that this is what I have here.
Thank you.
Okay, the design I have is slightly different, and let me see why it is different. Does this look correct?
Yeah, I did that myself too. I looked at yours and I got something.
Okay, so okay, so let's go ahead and simplify this. So here we get we can take these two. We can take these two, and we can get this one. So our design is going to be okay. We have these two, so those are x. S1 plus.
X bar S1
is correct, and this here is that is S1 S0 S. One S0 S1 S0 bar. And the third term is this term here, which is
X S1 bar S0.
And for here we get those, and that is going to give us these two are x. This is x bar. And the central part is S0 plus X S0 bar. Okay, how's that? So we can go ahead and design our circuit. Present state, this would be S1. We need three AND gates there. X bar S1 S1, S0 bar. And S1 bar. Oh, I have to squeeze in three of them here. Let me draw this a little bigger. S1 bar. S0. And here we have X1 bar S0. X bar S0 and then X S0 bar. And the output will be taken directly from S0 and S1. And notice that here I am implying that X bar is a complement of X, and S1 and S0 are here, and here we have S1 bar and S0 bar. So that would be our design of the finite state machine.
So on the exam, we don't have to show like the inputs coming in and make all the different lines go to it and show the outputs of the S2. As long as we just label it like that, it's fine.
Yeah, labeling like this would be fine. Yeah. Okay. If you want, you can have this. You can connect them if you like, but you can imply the connections by having the same label. So that is a common practice for convenience.
Okay. For you've got just the one X coming in, is that just showing that you needed an X and an X invert? Because you highlighted that you needed the X bar and the X all the way down. Just wondering whether we have to draw that invert.
The reason is that S1 and S1 bar are directly available.
Right.
Because flip-flops always have the complementary output available. But just to indicate that you are going to need an inverter.
Okay.
But that's the only inverter you are going to need. So you're not going to need any other inverters.
Okay. Would it be, if we labeled it as X on the inputs and drew a bubble on the input of each of those, would that be correct?
Oh, you mean where we have X bar?
Yeah, if I just drew a bubble on the input, got rid of the inverter.
Oh, wherever you have an inverter, you mean?
Just put a bubble on the input.
Yeah, because when you put a bubble, so when you do this, and this is of course by itself is not a real gate. By this we actually mean this is kind of a shorthand notation, right? So this actually stands for this. So this actually it stands for an inverter. So as we have seen, and you may have seen that in several books, many of the authors, they will put a bubble like this. And I think in our textbook also, I think they have done it. And however, the thing is that many of these inverters may not actually be needed. So for example, if you could put an inverter here with this X bar, but actually a single inverter would be enough, because you can simply take this X bar and connect this here. So physically, of course, if you have some X bar already available, then you don't need another inverter. Although in a diagram, we would often regard that to be a kind of a convenient shorthand notation to keep it like this. Any questions or comments? Now this is the design process. And analysis is opposite. In case of analysis, we start with the design. Let's show the design process, analysis process. Now let's say if we are given a design like this. Then the first step in analysis is to find out the equation for the combinational circuits. So maybe we can analyze the same circuit that we have here, and if we have not made a mistake, then we should go back to where we started our design. So first thing is to get the equations. For the combinational circuit. And then, second step is to fill in the state table. And then, get a state diagram. So let's do maybe a couple of parts of that. But before that, are there any questions on design?
Just one more time. So if we're doing this the other way around, in product of, yeah, product of sums, then we would just find D1 and D0 with respect to the, like, D1, D0 not, right? And then do the Morgan's law.
That's true, yeah. So if you, yeah, we had, this is in sum of products form, right? And in case of product of sums form, so we would get, basically we want to get it in product of sums form, and the approach is, as we have seen, that you get first complement of the function in sum of products form, and then complement both sides and apply De Morgan's theorem, and that will give you the function in product of sums form.
And then doing the Morgan's theorem is really just flipping the, what do you mean?
Well, De Morgan's theorem, so now there are two forms of the De Morgan's theorem. Depending on how you state, there are, so the important thing to remember is, now we are actually talking about combinational design, which is also included in the test. Now in case of De Morgan's theorem, we have okay. If you have x ended with y, and if you take complement of the whole thing, according to De Morgan's theorem, that is you equal to x bar plus y bar. So the way to remember this is that there are two things here. There could have been three. Same thing would still apply. You take this x and here's the complement of x, y, take the complement of y, and this operation is replaced by its complementary operation. So that's a way to memorize the De Morgan's theorem. And this would be x bar and then the y bar. Let me apply De Morgan's theorem. So you should be able to apply De Morgan's theorem. Okay, coming back to finite state machine analysis. So you get the equations for the combinational circuit. So here, so I will get the equations, and actually equations you happen to have in front of you, which are these equations. So you are going to get these equations. And once you have the equations, you should be able to figure out that D1 for a certain value of x, S0 and S1 should be equal to 0 or 1. So basically, by applying these equations, you should be able to fill in the truth table. And once you have gotten the state table, like this here, you should be able to get the state diagram, which is basically the same thing, except it is in a visual form. Any questions or comments on this? Okay, let's, and you should be able to, exercise, you should be able to say what the output would be if you apply a certain set of inputs. So for example, let us say in this circuit, we have, let's assume that the initial state is perhaps, it could be in any initial state, but let's assume perhaps 0, 0, and we have applied inputs. Input values 0, 1, 0, 1, then what states it will be in successively. So let's have a little table here. So here is the state, and let's organize it the other way. Okay, how about we say input here, and the state, and let's call it S0, S1. Okay, let's organize it this way. And in the beginning, state was 0, 0. And initial state, and your input is x. Then what state it should go to next? Obviously, it should go to state 0, 0. That would be the next state, right? And if the corresponding input is 1, then it should next go to state 0, 1. And let's say we have set that input is 0, so next state is going to be 0, 1. And if you apply input 1, then it will next go to state 1, 0. And so on. Any questions?
Are we going to have to implement that grid that you did, or can we always just do it like that?
Which one? Oh, this year?
No, not like that. You know, you remember that the shorthand notation where you have grid and then you have grid down here?
Oh, PLA. Yeah, you should be able to do the PLA. So if I ask you to give a PLA diagram, then you should be able to have a PLA diagram, the kind of PLA diagram we have seen. So you should be able. So for example, I guess I just erased that here. Let's do it sequentially to make sure we haven't forgotten anything. So let me read these topics once again sequentially, and let's see if there are any questions. Gates and Boolean algebra. So you need to know about the gates and Boolean algebra. That means you need to know about Boolean, you need to know about De Morgan's theorem, and you should be able to show that things like AB bar plus AB is equal to A. You should be able to prove that, right? And you should be able to prove things like this. And other things like this, which are part of the Boolean algebra. You should be able to simplify Boolean algebraic expressions. And functional blocks, decoders, multiplexers. So if I say that there is a decoder, and let's say it has two select lines and four outputs, then if the select lines have these values, which output will be selected? And for multiplexer, if I say that this is a multiplexer, and which has these inputs coming in. So if you have a multiplexer, here's the select line. Now this is how they are drawn in the book. And here you have some values. Let's say here you have values. Let's make it easy. Okay. I guess I can call them A and B. So I could ask you a question like this. If you want the output to be equal to A, what should be the bit on the select line?
Zero.
And now obviously should be zero, right? You should also know how a multiplexer would look like. So I could ask you to draw a diagram of a multiplexer that selects one bit from two bits. So you should be able to give a diagram of this in a simple case when these are just a single line. But if I give you I guess you should be able to do it for any size, but I would guess that in an exam, I would probably keep things of sizes which are not too big. Two-level PLAs and ROMs. So you should be able to design using full adders. So I could tell you that here is a set of interconnected full adders that form a parallel binary adder. And these are full adders. And if I give you the lines, if I give you the values on the input lines, you should be able to find out what will be the outputs and what would be the values on these carry lines? Questions on this? So you should be able to fill in the values there. PLA minimization. Now, if I give you a truth table and you have to implement that using a PLA and you have to have the PLA minimized, would you first use the Karnaugh maps and get a PLA table and then minimize it? Or would you first directly get a PLA table and then minimize the product terms? In other words, if you want to minimize the PLA, do you need to first go through a Karnaugh map minimization? That is right. You don't need to do a Karnaugh map minimization. And the reason is that you will be doing minimization of the product terms by checking to see if two product terms can be merged, or sometimes four. And so there's no point in doing a separate minimization. In fact, it is possible in some cases that you might do a Karnaugh map minimization and that may not result in the best answer, because you may already do some combinations and you may not be able to see the possibility that you can minimize some product terms in your PLA. So basically, in PLA minimization, your objective is to minimize the product terms. Delays and synchronization. So you should know about propagation delays, and you should know about the use of the clock. And flip-flops, I guess you should know what the flip-flops are. We didn't talk about how the flip-flops themselves are constructed. Now, you have probably seen something like that before, maybe some simple implementation. And there are other implementations also. So we didn't worry about it. We just assumed that we know that there's a flip-flop which we have to use as a design element. So if you have to talk about flip-flop as a design element.
Did we only cover, did we do D flip-flops, or did we do like SR and JK?
We only talked about D flip-flops. So if you know about any other kinds of flip-flops, try not to think about them. Because we didn't do any other kinds of flip-flops. Did you do other flip-flops?
Well, I mean, I'm EV, so.
Yeah, it depending on, I guess if you are an electrical engineer, then you have to know about other kinds of flip-flops, but we have simplified things, and we are using only D flip-flops. And D flip-flops are good enough for just about everything that we will do.
I have a question about delay propagation.
Okay.
How can we calculate the delay?
Oh, propagation delay. Actually, that's a good question. Now, we have seen a simple approach for estimating propagation delay. So we say that if a signal has to go through a certain number of logic levels, so let's assume that we are considering this. So here we have two levels of logic. And let's assume there are no inverters, or inverters don't have any propagation delays. And let us say that this has maybe certain amount of propagation delay, let's assume, how much should we assume? Now what kind of propagation delays we should expect these days?
Picoseconds,
yeah. That's a good answer. So pico is, how much is pico? 10 raised to
12.
Minus 12, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, so basically with, okay, you should be able to figure this out. If I say that you are using a processor with a certain frequency, you should be able to calculate the clock period. So for example, if I say that you have a 1 gigahertz, how much is 1 gigahertz? And that is 1 multiplied by 10 raised to? We have megahertz and then we have gigahertz. So that raised 10 raised to 9, right? So if you have 1 megahertz clock, then your clock period is equal to, and this is of course cycles per second, and the clock period would be 10 raised to minus 9 seconds, and that is 1 nanosecond.
You want us to take it all the way down to nanosecond?
You mean propagation delays?
Do you want the answer in nanoseconds, or can you just say 10 minutes?
Well, in many cases I will accept either of them, but I do expect you to know this. So if I say give the answer in nanosecond, and if you don't give this, then we have to take some points off, because we expect you to know that what is a nanosecond and so on. So if we specifically ask you to say how many nanoseconds, then answer has to be in nanoseconds. So I was coming back here. So let's assume that the delay here is maybe 0.1 to 1 nanoseconds. And this is 0.1 nanoseconds. Then what is the maximum delay that would be encountered when signals pass through the circuit? And delay through here is 0.1 nanoseconds. And what is the maximum propagation delay? How many of you say 0.3 nanoseconds? Okay, how many of you say 0.2 nanoseconds? Okay, I guess that is the right answer. So remember, signals here and here, they are traveling in parallel, so there is no extra time. But anything that is sequential, that you have to pass through one after the other, then of course propagation delays add.
Don't we also have to take into account what the load is? I mean, if I had that N gate driving a load of 50, my propagation delay is going to be longer.
Okay, so the question is, now this is the approximation we will use in this class. And of course, you can always have more precision and more detail. So that's actually a good point, that if you look at electrical characteristics, then you will find that propagation delays depend on a number of things, including how much load you have on a certain line. So if you have on a line, if you have a lot of load, and so the load would depend on how many other devices it is driving, or load could depend on, if you have output of a pin which is going outside of the chip, then you have a higher load there. So whenever you have higher load, propagation delays are higher. But that is, let's leave that for electrical engineers. So, any electrical engineers here? There are some, right?
As long as we're within the fan out limit for the hand can be.
And there's generally there's a linear relationship between fan out and propagation delay. But and in fact, if you have an industrial strength simulator, so I think our simulator is not quite industrial strength logistic. But if you have an industrial strength simulator, it will automatically take into account this linear relationship between fan out, number of lines a certain output is driving, and the propagation delay. So basically, we will, in this course, largely think in terms of number of levels of logics that need to be traveled, and we will take that to be an indicator. We will regard that to be an approximate indicator of the propagation delays. And flip-flops. So you should be able to design using flip-flops. For example, you should be able to design finite state machines like we have. Registers. You should be able to, a register can load information in parallel. We have seen that. So if you have a register, now a lot of times we will show a register in this way. Sometimes we might show individual inputs. For example, we might show that, okay, this is a 32-bit register, but sometimes it is too cumbersome to draw each line, so we will show the lines collectively. And this register will load information in parallel. Now we have talked about shift registers, which loads information 1 bit at a time. We talked about memory addressing. In MIPS, you address each successive byte. In other words, each byte has an address. So a word actually occupies the 4 addresses. And we talked about RAM chips. And again, we didn't look at internal architecture of the chip. We didn't talk about it too much. Again, that is something that if you are interested, you can find that in the literature. But we have kind of left it for the electrical engineers to worry about that. We looked at finite state machines, analysis and design and behavior, a use of a circuit simulator, so you should be able to do that, you should know how simulators work, RISC and CISC processors, you should know what is special about a RISC processor. We talk about the MIPS registers. We have 32 registers, so-called general purpose registers. Register 0 is actually special. Register 31 is special because it saves the return address. And many of the other registers are dedicated. Instruction formats and instruction fields. So you should be able to, if I give you an instruction, add this and this, or load from memory and things like that, you should be able to convert that from assembly to binary. Or if I give you binary, you should be able to figure, translate it back into assembly language. You should be able to look up information on this card.
So there are other cards in the
now what's that?
You can bring the card up.
Yeah, bring the card. Bring the card, but you cannot write anything on this card.
And that card has the instructions and the, what they mean in binary, etc.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So you should be able to find, look up information on this card. So if you have not been using this card, make sure you are sufficiently familiar with it, and you should be able to use it for this. We talked about addressing modes, so you can address the operands using a few different modes. We had talked about that. We talked about big endian, little endian. Okay, MIPS, is it big endian or little endian? It's kind of unclear because it can be I set to be either.
DEC used it one way and SGI used it the other way.
Right, that's true. So, but you should know that big endianness and little endianness that is there, which sometimes you have to worry about. If you are only if everything that you are doing is word sized, then you don't need to worry about it. But if there's something that sometimes you're using 32-bit things, and sometimes you want to go in there and pick out individual bytes, then you need to worry about whether something is organized in a big endian way or a little endian way. Incidentally, does anyone know where these terms came from? Big endian, little endian? How many of you have read Gulliver's Travels? So, which is actually, it's supposed to be a children's book, but actually it was not written, it was written to be a political satire. I think it was written in 18th century in England. So it's actually supposed to be a political satire, so there are these two groups of people who fight with each other, and the main difference between these two groups of people is that one, the big endians, they break the egg one way, and little endians, they break the egg the other way, and they of course disagree violently about which is the right way to do it, which is actually fits quite nicely with the discussion that happened in the early days of computer architecture. People argue this is the better way or this is the better way. Actually, it doesn't matter. As long as you know which particular way things are, you just work with it. Instruction assembly, load and store instructions. So you should be able to do these load and store instructions. You should know what they do, that they move information from here to here, how the addressing works. And you should know about the computational instructions, add, subtract, immediate instructions, and so on. So you should be able to figure out, if I give you that, this is the instruction, this is what you have in the register. So after the execution, what will you find in whatever in the destination register? So things of that type, you should be able to do that. So questions?
Is it going to be like multiple choice?
Multiple choice? Yeah, I think probably the questions will not be multiple choice. In most cases, they will be kind of specific answer. Multiple choice takes too much paper. So, and multiple choice tests are harder, right? Multiple choice questions are harder. Anyone agrees with that?
No.
No?
One of the answers is in front of you.
Well,
it depends on how tricky it is.
Because questions to be good multiple choice questions, several of the questions should sound like the right answer. Because if I make things too obvious, then there's no point of having the question. So multiple choice questions are not always easy. But anyway, they take too much paper, so probably we may have maybe one or two, but mostly you will have to give a specific answer. So sometimes you may have to fill in the blanks. So you have to do something, and for convenience, I will provide you blanks. So you could be questions of that type. Okay, so I will see you on Thursday. And if you haven't taken the quiz, I think still we have a little bit of time. No, that's just a special case. So usually, if I give you one sum of product form, you cannot get product of some form immediately. So, but that was a special case. Yeah.
Okay, question. I'm having trouble reading that one. Green one.
Oh,
I wonder if I can look a bit. It's the same one. I just made it really happy.
Okay, yeah. So just tell us in the beginning that you have this.
Okay. Is it doing the squinto vision?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
The heck is that?
Yeah, I'm getting there. Some of the things are so small.
It's the ones
right here. These ones right on the other.
Yeah, some of them are really small.
Yeah, this one is easy.
That's true.
Hard to read.
Yeah.
Thank you.